Yeah, that's right. This weekend, the time changes. Verse number 1. Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. Now this, we've been leading up to this battle for a little while here. If you remember from earlier studies, all the way back to chapter 28 actually is where this thing started taking shape, where the Philistines gathered their armies together for warfare to fight with Israel. This is chapter 28, verse 1, and then Saul gets his army together, and they come and they pitch in Gilboa, it says in 28:4. So finally this battle breaks out, and this is after Saul has gone to this lady with the familiar spirit, and she was able to call Samuel up, or God allowed Samuel to come up to speak with Saul about this battle. But it finally breaks out, and what happens is exactly what Samuel told Saul was going to happen. Now, do you remember when Samuel was talking to Saul, what he told him was going to happen? He told him that Israel was going to lose, and that they would be delivered into the hand of the Philistines, and that Saul and his sons were going to die. That's what Samuel said. Now you see this being fulfilled here in chapter 31, verse 1, where it says the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. So here you have the Philistines beating Israel. And it says in verse 2, the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons. And the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Melchishua, Saul's son. So his three sons mentioned here are killed. And that is further fulfillment, because that's what Samuel said to Saul. Not only would the Israelites lose, but Saul's sons would die. And then it says in verse 3, and the battle went sore against Saul. Sore, that's a Bible word for it's getting rough, okay? It's really heating up. The battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was sore wounded of the archers. It's badly wounded is the idea. It's a bad wound. Of course, archers, that's pretty well self-explanatory. That's people shooting bows and arrows. And they hit him, and he's wounded very badly. Now, we're going to see here how this thing ends with Saul, or at least how it appears to end, but we'll get, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story in the first chapter of 2 Samuel. That's where you'll get the rest of that story, or the rest of this story. But verse 4, it says, then said Saul unto his armor bearer, draw thy sword and thrust me through therewith. Use your sword. His armor bearer, these kings, especially important people, they had an armor bearer, somebody that went before them to protect them. And he tells his armor bearer to take his sword and to stab him with it, to thrust him through, to put it through him, and finish him off is the idea. He says, lest these uncircumcised, talking about the Philistines, notice he describes them as uncircumcised because circumcision was a Jewish thing. So uncircumcised, come and thrust me through and abuse me. He was afraid that the Philistines would get him before he died, and that they would treat him really badly. They wouldn't just stab him and just immediately finish him off. They might stab him, but he says, abuse me. In other words, might do some really bad things to him, maybe even before he died, but also after he died. Lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me, but his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. That word sore is showing up a lot through here. It just means that his armor bearer was really scared. He's really afraid. And I'm sure he was afraid for a lot of reasons. For one, he's right in the middle of a battle that is not going well at all. I mean, these people dying all around him. And the army that he's with is, you know, the men and people there running for their lives. And now he's seeing his king injured very badly. So he's got a lot to be afraid about. And he probably was afraid of what might happen to him if he did finish Saul off, if he thrust him through with the sword. If somebody found out about that, he maybe was afraid that they would do something bad to him because of that. So what he does is he ends his own life. This is a biblical example of suicide. Therefore, Saul took a, or excuse me, but his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Therefore, Saul took a sword and fell upon it. But look at verse 5. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. So he takes his own life, kills himself. Maybe just thinking that that's what he needed to do, feeling like he would probably die anyway because of allowing something to happen to Saul. But he's in a very tense, stressful situation, and that goes back to what we talked about a few times earlier on about how stress and high-tension situations will oftentimes make you say and do things that you wouldn't otherwise say and do. When you're in the heat of the moment, so to speak, and tensions are running high and emotions are running high, sometimes you act hastily and you do things that later on you regret. And of course, in this man's case, he wasn't able to regret it later on, because once he did this, it was over. He's gone out into eternity, but he ends his own life in the heat of the moment. Have you ever noticed how hard it is sometimes to keep a clear mind and to think clearly when you're in a very difficult situation? You ever notice how that is? You won't, and that's why I've said to myself, and I warn people about doing a lot of talking about what you would do if you were in somebody's shoes or in somebody's situation, or if I was in this situation, this is what I would do. Well, you might, but you might not either. You may have the best of intentions, but it's easy to do a lot of big talking when you're not in it, okay? Real easy to say what you would do when it's somebody else going through it, or if it's something that you haven't yet gone through. It's very easy to talk a big game and say, well, I'd handle it this way and I'd do this and I'd do that, and you may intend to do it. You may intend to do it, but when you are just put right in that thing, and especially if it's something that happens suddenly, and things are falling apart all around you, and it gets very bad, you might not handle it the way you thought you would. You may wind up doing completely opposite, just the total opposite of what you thought you would do. I know I have. There's been things, you know, I do this. And I tell you another thing about that, talking big about what you'll do. I tell you what the Lord will do for you, because he's done it for me. You start doing a lot of big talking about what you would do, especially if you're looking at somebody else going through it and thinking, well, they ought to do this, and I'd do it this way and all that. He'll probably at some point let you get you a little bit of it. That's probably what he's going to do somewhere down the line, is put you right in that very thing or something similar to it, or maybe even something a little worse, and say, okay, now, big boy, you did all that big talking. Let's see what you're going to do about it. I'm reminded in the Bible of a fellow named Simon Peter, who his Lord looked at him and said, before this night is over, you're going to deny me three times. Or before the cock crows, you're going to deny me three times. And he says, Lord, though everybody else be offended, I will never be offended. And I'm gonna tell you what I believe about that. I believe that when he said those words, he really believed that. I don't think Simon Peter went into that situation thinking in his mind he was going to deny the Lord Jesus. I believe he had the best of intentions, and he fully intended to be faithful all the way, even to the point of death. That's what he said. But when the heat got on, you see what happened. So sometimes it doesn't work. It doesn't work like you think it's going to, and it's hard. I'm just telling you, and anybody that won't admit this, I think, is just not being honest. It's hard to keep a clear mind and respond the right way when you are in a very difficult situation, a high-pressure situation, especially if you've got to say something or you've got to do something quickly. It's very easy to make a mistake or do something that you had not thought you would do. And I just, this fella here, you know, he kills himself. I don't think he wanted to do that, do you? No. I don't think he got up that morning and thought, you know, at some point today I'm going to kill myself. No. He just wound up in a bad, bad situation, and stuff is falling apart all around him, and people are dying, and he's just seen his king fall on his own sword and what he thinks kill himself. So he's like, oh, well, you know, best thing to do, I'll just kill myself. So he does. But if you look back in verse 4, it says, but his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it. So he's already wounded. But he doesn't want the Philistines to get their hands on him, so he says, look, if I can't get my armor bearer, I'm going to finish myself off. So he stabs himself with his own sword, intending to end his life. The armor bearer believes that Saul is dead. It looks like he's dead, so he kills himself. But what we're going to find in the first chapter of 2 Samuel is that Saul was not dead. He was wounded by the archers, stabbed through with his own sword, but he still had life in him. He still was not dead at this point. But verse number 6 of this chapter says, so Saul died, and his three sons, and his armor bearer, and all his men that same day together. Now, reading that, if you're not careful, you think, well, Saul is dead. But verse 6 is just a summation of the events of the day. That's all that verse is. And Saul did die that day. Okay, and his sons died that day, and all his men died that day, and his armor bearer died that day. But Saul didn't die at the moment that he fell on his sword. He did die that day, but not at that moment. So verse 6 is just like a summation of what happened here in this battle. And of course you see that what Samuel said was going to happen, every bit of that happened. Saul and his sons die. Verse 7, and when the men of Israel that were on the other side of the valley, and they that were on the other side Jordan, saw that the men of Israel fled, and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them. So these Israelites are running. They're leaving the cities where they've been living. And when they run, the Philistines just come in and take over. They start living in these cities. It says they dwelt in them. Verse 8, and it came to pass on the morrow, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, that they found Saul and his three sons fallen in Mount Gilboa. Now, they're coming back the next day, it says, to strip the slain. You know what they're doing? Have y'all ever seen a movie about like a war movie or something like that? Maybe Civil War or something else, I don't know, but just some war movie where, you know, a lot of people are laying out there on the battlefield dead, and then people are coming along and reaching in their pockets and getting out, you know, if they had money or a watch or a knife or some kind of position. You ever seen something like that before? Well, that's what they're doing. They just come along there and stripping the slain. Any valuables, anything they find in here that is of any value, they're taking that. And they're taking it for their own selves, obviously. And in the process of coming through here looking at all these dead folk, they find Saul and his three boys dead. Now, what did they do? Verse 9, and they cut off his head and stripped off his armor and sent into the land of the Philistines round about to publish it in the house of their idols and among the people. So they cut off his head, they take his armor, and then they send word into all of the land of the Philistines saying, you need to publish this. Make it known in the house of our idols where people are gathered to worship these idols. Tell them, tell everybody, let them know that we have killed Saul, that Saul is dead, that his three boys are dead. They're wanting to brag about it, wanting to make a big deal about it. Verse 10, and they put his armor, Saul's armor, in the house of Ashtaroth. Ashtaroth is a false god, a idol. And they had a house built for this false god, you see, verse 10. And they put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth. This is their way of trying to honor their god. It's their way of saying, you know, our god, Ashtaroth, is the one that allowed us to defeat Saul. Even people who worship idols see the need to give credit to that idol, to that, because they believe that is their god. They believe that their god is real, just like we know that our god is real, and they want to give credit to their god for whatever the accomplishment is. Now, if people will honor a idol, how much more should you and I honor the true and living God, who really is the one that does all that he does for us? We need to make sure that we always give the Lord glory and honor for what he accomplishes for us. And they put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth, and they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. And just hanging him out there, making just a disgraceful thing is what it is. It's just a terrible thing. Verse 11, and when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard of that which the Philistines had done to Saul, why would those people get involved? Why would Jabesh-Gilead, the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead, get involved in this thing? Well, if you read back in 1 Samuel, which we started later on in our study beyond this point, but if you read back in 1 Samuel chapter 11, you'll read a story about something that Saul did for these people just before he actually was anointed king. He had really already been picked out, but it hadn't been made official, hadn't been a public thing yet. But the Ammonites came against the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead and was going to take them captive. And Saul got word about it, and Saul rallied the troops, and I'm just putting it in a nutshell. He rallied the troops, and he came, and he defeated the Ammonites so that the people in Jabesh-Gilead would not be hurt. So these people here, when they hear about this, what's being done to Saul, even though Saul wasn't a good fella, these people still remembered what he did for them, and they appreciated the fact that Saul had stood up for them and had helped them in that difficult time in their life. And so they get involved. I think it's important. Would y'all agree with me about this? I think it's important to remember people who down through the years have been a blessing to us, who have helped us and done things for us, especially in times of difficulty. And we all have those, don't we? We all have those difficult times in life. And it never fails. It never fails. Or it hadn't failed to date in my life, I'll put it that way. It's never failed up to date. Anytime I've been in a difficult situation, the Lord has always had someone or certain someones that he has sent my way to be a help and a blessing to me. And we need to be sure that we don't forget those people. That's right. Absolutely. He did. And even though they might not have been spiritual, the Bible says to give honor where honor is due, you know. And even though a person may not be doing right, there is absolutely nothing wrong with you going to that person and saying, look, I just want to tell you again how much I appreciate what you did for me. I'm thankful for that. And you never know what kind of a difference that might make in their life. Just knowing that you do remember what they did and you appreciate what they did. I think you can take this, I mean, there's so many different ways you can go with it. But like our parents, for example, those who have had parents that have done for them throughout their life and been good to them, I think we need to be sure that we remember that. And not just parents, but friends, whatever the case might be. And these people here, they remembered what Saul did for them. And so they get involved in this thing here. And verse 12 says, all the valiant men, that's the brave men, arose and went all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan and came to Jabesh and burnt them there. And they took their bones and buried them under a tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. So they hear what the Philistines are doing to Saul's body and his sons, and they say, well, we're not going to have that. And they get them, some men together, and they go and they get them and they bring them back. They burn the bodies, what's left of them, and they bury the bones under a tree there in Jabesh. And then they fast for 7 days. This is all in honor of what Saul had done for them. The only thing that I'm not real sure about is the end of verse 12 where it says they burnt them there. It's talking about burning the bodies, obviously, which was, that wasn't a Jewish thing. That was more of a pagan thing. And I don't know if perhaps they did that because of some of the pagan influence that they had gotten after they came into the land. But if you start in Genesis and come through, even all the way in through the New Testament, when you have those Jews involved and somebody dies, what do? They bury them. They put them in a sepulcher somewhere. Okay, they don't. So this burning thing here, I don't know. I don't understand that unless, like I said, it was just something they had seen, because I do know. Yes, sir. That. And I think it could possibly be to prevent them from doing anything further with those bodies. Like if they did find out and came and attacked Jabesh, then they could just take the bodies back and you know, desecrate them again. So maybe by burning the bodies, then that would prevent the Philistines from being able to do anything with those bodies ever again. That may be it. I'm just not sure. I just know they burnt the bodies. And says they buried the bones there. Any questions about what we looked at in this chapter tonight? Yeah, unfortunately, it's many of us have eaten our words. That's why I weigh what I do today from eating words that I've said. I have an uncle And you know, it's not to make light of suicide, because that's a very real thing, and a lot of people are affected by that. But I have an uncle who said that if he ever decided to commit suicide, he was going to stick his head in a 5-gallon bucket of water. That way, if he changed his mind, he could just pull his head out. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Amen. I'm very thankful, very, very thankful, as I've said before, for the generous spirit that is in this church. I just in the years that I've been here pastoring, I can't even remember now. There's been so many times that our church has helped people. And I'm not trying to hang anything on us. We need to make sure we always give the Lord the credit for it, okay? But it is a wonderful blessing to see people that are so giving and so generous, that at least give the appearance that they enjoy helping other people. And that's what it's about.